that were disseminated in states across the country.
That were written by lobbyists.
Written by lobbyists, corporate lobbyists, and then just modified slightly to appeal to whatever it was. So a lot of legislation that was passed here during the past 14 years had no origin in the state, and it was written by these dark money lobbyists at these conventions, passed around. And that's how it worked. And the Heritage was a bigger picture one working on the federal government. And there was a vast infrastructure built up in the early 70s, and Weyrich was a key linchpin of that. And he was actually a Wisconsinite.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Dan Kaufman, Wisconsin native, author of The Fall of Wisconsin, The Conservative Conquest of a Progressive Bastion, and The Future of American Politics. He's also a contributing writer at The New Yorker magazine. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for a director of development to lead our fundraising team at Democracy Now! Learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is... We work together as a remarkable team produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Sharif Abdelkaddous, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warrenoff, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Massoud, Hannah Elias, Dennis Moynihan, our executive director, Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFica, Filippo, Miguel Noguera. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting.
Tune in to KBOO for our annual live broadcast of the Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, broadcasting from Friday, July 19th through Sunday, July 21st. This year's festival features Johnny Wheels and the Swamp Donkeys, Jujuba, and Tyrone Hendrix and the PDX Soul Collective. Again, that's KBOO's broadcast of the Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, live from St. John's. The broadcast starts at 4:30 p.m. on Friday and at 1 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. More information can be found at kboo.fm/cathedralpark24.
Hello, dear listeners. Oil for Kisses is a monthly program on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, that highlights the headier and weirder sides of underground metal, post-punk, DIY hardcore, and beyond. Every month features a different theme where we delve into the history of a specific genre topic or musical location, or simply churn out the best, brightest, and ugliest sounds from around the globe. Join me, DJ Krauthammer, every first Friday night, Saturday morning of the month, at midnight till 3 a.m. for Oil for Kisses to experience it for yourself. Only on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregonians have a week to comment on the implementation of new state regulations for confined animal farming operations.
There will not be a 30-day residency requirement for Washington state voters ahead of the 2024 election.
And in national news, a U.S. judge entirely dismisses the classified documents case against former President Donald Trump. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, July 15th, 2024. I'm Eliza Yurkov.
And I'm Marty Wall.
U.S. judge dismisses classified... A federal judge dismissed in its entirety the classified documents case against former President Donald Trump in a ruling today. Judge Eileen M. Cannon, who was elevated to the federal bench by the former president in 2020, ruled that the entire case must be thrown out because special counsel Jack Smith had been appointed in a way that violated the Constitution. Judge Cannon said that Mr. Smith's appointment to special counsel was improper because he was not appointed by the president or confirmed by the Senate. However, this upended nearly 30 years of a previous court decision reaching back to the Watergate era. Ever since the Clinton administration, special counsels have been governed by Justice Department regulations set through the Attorney General, not through the President or Congress. This is not the first highly unusual ruling Judge Cannon has made in this classified documents case, as she has granted a a serious audience to some of former President Trump's most far-fetched defense claims and has repeatedly scheduled hearings for issues that many federal judges would have dealt with on the merits of written filings. Trump stated on his Truth Social platform that the decision amounted to the dismissal of a lawless indictment. However, the majority of Democrats found the ruling to be unjust, including Senator Chuck Schumer, the majority leader. He said that the decision was misguided and that, quote, Judge Cannon cannot handle this case impartially and must be reassigned, end quote. The case is expected to be appealed by the plaintiffs.
Oregonians have a week to comment on the implementation of new state regulations for confined animal farming operations. The rules crack down on water usage, manure disposal, and location selection for these large-scale animal farms. Mason Kennedy has more.
Oregonians have until July 22nd to submit comments on the implementation of some new environmental restrictions for the state's largest farms. When the Oregon legislature passed Senate Bill 85 last year, these regulations were signed into law for confined animal feeding operations, or CAFOs. Now, the Oregon Department of Agriculture is working to implement them. Brian Posowitz, a staff attorney for Water Watch of Oregon, says the new rules will help protect one of Oregon's most important natural resources.
All Oregonians should care about that because all Oregonians should care about our water supplies, both in the streams and rivers, as well as in the groundwater, because those water supplies are precious to everybody.
The regulation means more closely monitoring the amount of water used by large farms and considering the placement of these operations to try to reduce the nitrate contamination in groundwater caused by manure. This move to protect Oregon's water supply coincides with an increase in demand for water as the state re-enters its wildfire season. As important as Oregon's water is, regulations often come with a price tag. CAFOs could be more limited in their site selection, disposal of waste, and use of water. The Oregon Farm Bureau predicts tougher rules will affect people's trips to the grocery store. Lauren Poor with the Bureau thinks the new rules will make it harder to buy local and wonders if the changes are justified.
There wasn't a clear indication that there needed to be changes to this program to protect Oregon's waterways or Oregon's water supply.
According to Poor, the previous regulations were working, and continuously changing them can be difficult for producers. The deadline is July 22nd to submit public comment to the Oregon Department of Agriculture before the regulations are finalized at the end of this summer. For Oregon News Service, I'm Mason Kennedy.
There will not be a 30-day residency requirement for Washington state voters ahead of the 2024 election. The requirement was struck down last year, but recently became official. Eric Tegedoff has more.
A 30-day residency requirement to register to vote in Washington state won't be in effect thanks to a federal court case that struck it down. Under the requirement, eligible voters wouldn't have been able to register within 30 days, even if they moved from one locality to another within the state. Jackie Boschak is head of the Washington State Alliance for Retired Americans, which brought the case to court. She says older people move around a lot.
We may decide to downsize, we want to live closer to our family members, or we choose to move to an assisted living or a nursing facility. And especially when a move is health-related, that timing can be unpredictable. So we may not even know if it's within 30 days of an election. Uh-oh, now we can't vote.
The case striking down the requirement was settled in November when the state agreed to a consent decree. But Washington Secretary of State Steve Hobbs recently made the decision official for the 2024 election. The Washington State Alliance for Retired Americans argued the rule violated the U.S. Voting Rights Act, which prohibits residency requirements. The requirement also goes against a 2018 state law legislators passed allowing voters to register up to 8 p.m. on Election Day. Boschak says this change is especially important for older people, who vote at the highest rate of any age group.
This was a fight on behalf of our 94,000 members of the Washington State Alliance that we were really proud to have taken on and won, and we think it was the right thing to do for all the voters in our state.
Washington's residency requirement is enshrined into the state's constitution, which means it would need to be amended to take the provision out. A similar lawsuit over a 30-day residency requirement is ongoing in North Carolina. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Nike has fired a significant number of employees working to make their products more environmentally friendly. This news comes as Nike struggles financially and announces their plan to cut back spending. Grant Button has more on the story.
Nike has lost a third of their employees focused on sustainability since December. That's according to a new report conducted by the Oregonian and ProPublica. 20% of these employees were fired. This comes at a time when Nike wasn't on track to hit their own targets for reducing emissions, even before the layoffs. Nike has struggled financially in recent years, considering their stock price has been cut in half since late 2021 and fell 20% in June. Nike announced last December that they plan to cut costs by $2 billion over a three-year span. However, they chose to lay off employees who primarily worked on sustainability at a much higher rate than employees in other sectors, demonstrating their focus on shorter-term goals. Two of just five people working to trace the origins of the hundreds of millions of pounds of materials Nike uses were fired. In addition to layoffs, Nike has gradually moved sustainability down the corporate hierarchy. In 2011, the sustainability team reported directly to the CEO, but currently, the sustainability team reports to the chief supply chain officer, one position away from the CEO. Ken Pucker is a former executive with the Timberland shoe brand and a professor of practice at Tufts University's Fletcher School. He said, quote, "Given Nike's leadership and investment, their retreat is unfortunate, especially in light of the scale and urgency of the challenge," end quote. Nike has yet to address the news organization's estimates of job cuts when asked. For KBOO News, I'm Grant Button.
Health professionals urge people to stay out of the sun and hydrate more frequently as the U.S. faces extreme temperatures. Nina Mayfair has more on the story.
Health experts are urging residents to stay hydrated and stay out of the sun during peak periods, especially during the heat wave that is gripping much of the U.S. The CDC says older adults, young children, and people with chronic diseases are at highest risk for heat-related illness. But the heat also poses dangers to healthy people, especially during prolonged or strenuous activities in hot weather. UnitedHealthcare's Donna O'Shea says people use healthcare-related services a lot more on very hot days, and hospitals report a spike in ER visits.
One thing we do think people want to remember is that virtual care can help people connect with a healthcare professional 24/7 from their home when they have concerns that arise.
The Department of Health and Human Services says extreme heat can trigger asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease in some people. Blazing heat can also pose risks for people struggling with mental health issues and can worsen acute psychiatric and substance use symptoms. Dr. Rob Tager with the American Academy of Pediatrics Kentucky chapter says noticeable symptoms of dehydration or heat stroke can include irritability, lethargy, and fussiness in toddlers. He explains it's important to ensure small children stay hydrated.
I always tell adults that are taking care of kids and toddlers that, you know, if you're uncomfortable, the child is much more uncomfortable than you with regard to temperature.
Dr. Tager adds pediatricians often see an influx of young patients with insect bites, poison ivy, and other summer rashes. Because there aren't many treatment options available other than waiting for the rash to resolve and trying to alleviate itching, he says prevention is key.
Knowing which plants to stay away from, good observation and parenting to keep kids away from more dangerous plants, keeping them away from dawn and dusk when the mosquitoes and bugs are a lot worse.
For KBOO News and the Public News Service, I'm Nina Mayfair.
Mayor Ted Wheeler's office is hosting a community forum tonight, July 15th, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. to take public input to the changes to the proposal for the new police oversight system in Portland. The city released a new version of its proposal in late June, incorporating some of the feedback from a meeting in December, where members of the All-Volunteer Police Accountability Commission, or PAC, sounded off on the city's drastically altered version of their original proposal. The ongoing saga of the new oversight system began in 2020 when 82% of Portland voters approved a powerful new replacement for the city's relatively weak current system, which is centered on Independent Police Review Office, or IPR. The PAC worked for 20 months from 2021 to 2023, researching and crafting a proposal for the new system, including getting feedback from all sitting city commissioners, the mayor, the police bureau and union, and community groups. Late last year, the city received PAC's proposal and countered with a significantly scaled back version, which was met with disappointment by many community members and PAC appointees. PAC members pushed back at the brief December meeting, which was otherwise dominated by city staff and attorneys defending the changes. Nevertheless, the city did incorporate some of PAC's feedback into the updated version of their proposal. Several PAC members signed on to the letter over the weekend, thanking the city for making a few changes, but also pointing many more new or carried forward issues from the existing city proposal, including a requirement that members of the new oversight board, quote, cannot have bias for or against law enforcement, unquote. A prohibition of the release of the officer named ability for former law enforcement officers to be on the staff that supports the board, among other concerns. Tonight's forum will be in hybrid format. People can attend and testify in person at the Portland building at 1120 Southwest 5th Avenue in room 108 on the first floor. Or people can attend on Zoom using the link in the article about the proposed code changes that can be found at www.portland.gov/Wheeler under the news section.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on Oregon's estuaries with Annie Merrill. She discusses the importance of these areas where rivers meet the sea and the work her organization does towards conserving them. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather is cloudy with a low of 71. Tomorrow's weather is sunny with a high of 94. Today in history, in 1978, the longest walk ended, a 2,800-mile journey across the U.S. in support for Native American justice. Several hundred marchers went from California to Washington, D.C. in an effort to draw attention towards issues affecting Native Americans. These included lack of jobs, housing, and unjust legislation. The legislation would have eliminated treaties, shut down federal programs for hospitals and schools, and ended Native American reservations. None of the bills affecting Native American rights passed in Congress. The quote of the day is from Maya Angelou, an American memoirist, poet, and civil rights activist. She published 7 autobiographies, several books of poetry, and is credited with many plays, movies, and television shows over a 50-year span. She said, quote, "I've learned that people will forget what you said. People will forget what you did. But people will never forget how you made them feel," end quote.
Tribes will be present at the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. Many plan to network with Republican politicians and delegates. The president of the Ho-Chunk Nation plans to speak at the convention to remind the politicians of issues that Native Americans currently face. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with the National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Republican National Convention is still set to begin Monday in Milwaukee, despite the Saturday shooting that wounded presumptive GOP presidential nominee Donald Trump. Chuck Kornbach of station WUWM reports tribes will have a presence at the RNC.
The Forest County Potawatomi Tribe is part of the host committee for the Milwaukee Convention. At least one event is planned at their local casino. Other tribes are sending representatives to network with Republican politicians and delegates. Ho-Chunk Nation President John Greendeer says, for one thing, it's important to remind the convention that much of southern Wisconsin was once Ho-Chunk territory. But Greendeer says there will also be discussions about current issues.
There's a few things that are very similar to what non-tribal communities are dealing with, and that is housing needs. It's technology and broadband access. It is food security. It is response to any opioid or addiction crises. It is infrastructure.
Greendeer says he believes those concerns hit Indian country harder because of less access to economic development and public services. He says there may be a push in Congress to give the tribes control over more of their gaming revenue to meet tribal needs. The Oneida Nation will also have a representative at the RNC. Vice Chairman Brandon Yellowbird Stevens says one message he hopes the tribe gets across is one of sovereignty, including that Native people should have more say-so in use of federal funds they receive.
That can relate to any and all initiatives that are on the reservation. So that's healthcare, education, housing, economic development. And so we have that foundational argument going to Congress and those who have the purse strings.
The tribal leaders say they also expect to send representatives to next month's Democratic National Convention in Chicago. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Quernbach.
A courtroom in Manitoba erupted in celebration after a judge found serial killer Jeremy Skibitzky guilty in the killings of four Indigenous women. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, family members of the victims say they hope this will bring closure.
Many of those family members and friends continued their celebration on the street outside the courthouse after the guilty verdict. Jeremy Skibitzky was found guilty of the first-degree murder in the gruesome killings of Morgan Harris, Mercedes Myron, Rebecca Contois, and an unidentified woman who was given the name of Buffalo Woman. Skibitzky preyed on Indigenous women at homeless shelters, a crime the prosecution claimed was racially motivated. The judge refused to believe the defense argument that Skibitzky was not criminally responsible because of a mental illness. Robert Karras is a criminal defense lawyer.
The man's a serial killer, and he's trying to get away with murder by arguing that he lacked the ability of knowing right from wrong, not legally, but morally. It was a long shot at best. Defense lawyers sometimes need to follow their client's advice and instructions and move forward with a defense, even if they may not even believe in it themselves, because that's the client's instruction. But what I can say is that I think the conviction is entirely appropriate.
First-degree murder convictions carry an automatic life sentence with no parole for 25 years. No date has yet been set for Skibitzky's sentencing hearing. Manitoba Premier Wab Kanu says the next step must be the searching of a landfill north of Winnipeg to find the remains of two of the victims. That process is expected to begin this fall. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Former President Trump is injured but safe after an attempted assassination, and many condemn the political violence. Democrats' fears intensify over Biden's run, and North Carolina could require proof of citizenship to vote. With more on the story, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
An assassination attempt is contrary to everything we stand for as a nation, everything. It's not who we are as a nation. It's not America. And we cannot allow this to happen.
President Joe Biden condemning political violence following the attempted assassination of former President Donald Trump at an election rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. Biden ordered a review of security measures for the Republican National Convention set to start today and called for a separate review of security for Saturday's rally. The FBI has identified 20-year-old Thomas Matthew Crooks as the shooter. He was killed by the Secret Service. Crooks was a registered Republican, but records show he had made a small contribution to a progressive group in 2021. The motive is still under investigation. The Republican Party of Wisconsin says there won't be major changes at the RNC for now. Attendees have started arriving in Milwaukee, including Brenda Malewski, who calls Trump the best person to unite the country.
We still have the confidence knowing that Trump's going to be that person. We can have peace if you want it. All right? Let's just value people with differences.
Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina tells NBC he wishes he was surprised by the assassination attempt, but says he's been worried about something like that happening for a long time.
He represents a point of view that millions share. The rhetoric is way too hot, but I was just grateful that he made it. But let's don't forget, there's a man who lost his life by attending a political rally. He's dead.
A former Buffalo Township fire chief was killed in the shooting. According to spectators and his family, Corey Comparator died shielding his wife and daughters. Two other attendees were also shot but are reportedly in stable condition. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro is calling on all leaders to speak and act with moral clarity.
We're all leaders need to take down the temperature and rise above the hateful rhetoric that exists and search for a better, brighter future for this nation.
On Friday, Biden held a highly anticipated news conference, trying to quell fears about his abilities. But Democratic Colorado Congressman Jason Crow says the party risks losing the election unless there's what he calls a major change.
In reading the tea leaves is very troubling for many of us right now. So we want to see a change.
There are now a total of 19 congressional Democrats calling for Biden to step aside. Finally, North Carolina has become the seventh state to put a state constitutional amendment on the November ballot that would require proof of citizenship to vote. Republican State Senator Phil Berger says it's needed to combat voter fraud, despite a lack of any evidence that non-citizen voting is an actual problem.
You can make a legalistic argument that something like that is already prohibited. However, I don't see any harm in including that as a constitutional amendment.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Telehealth provisions for Medicare will expire at the end of the year without action from Congress. A new report details how members can enact policies that will better sustain telehealth going forward. Eric Tegethoff has more on the story.
Telehealth has been key to healthcare in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, but some of the flexibilities for this type of care for Medicare patients could expire soon. A new report from the Bipartisan Policy Center details how Congress can improve telehealth. Without action from Congress, telehealth provisions for Medicare expire at the end of 2024. Maya Sandalo with the Bipartisan Policy Center says telehealth is especially important for rural states like Idaho.
We know that patients have to travel way farther than folks in urban areas to access care. Hospitals are shutting down and struggling to stay afloat. And so telehealth is really an important part of this puzzle when it comes to helping people living in rural areas to access care.
Sandalo says Congress looks likely to give a 2-year extension to telehealth provisions, but she also notes that members should consider ways to ensure people can access this care. The report recommends 3 policies for Congress to consider if it extends telehealth provisions. First, she says policymakers need to consider the cost with a study from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services because there is some disagreement about whether it costs more than in-person care. Sandalo says CMS should also set up a way to track telehealth companies, noting that some might be providing care only over the phone without the option for video calls.
These companies are really important for expanding access to care, but there are some quality concerns associated with some of these companies.
Lastly, Sandalo says Congress should make some of the policies around telehealth permanent, such as doing away with location restrictions. She says telehealth is going to continue to be important to the healthcare landscape going forward.
Research finds that it can be really high quality, equally good as compared to in-person care, and we're living in a behavioral health crisis, and any measures to expand access to care are really important.
For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Civil rights activists advocates are warning that the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025 blueprint for the next GOP presidential administration, if enacted, would eliminate protections for millions of people in Colorado and across the nation. It would also make it easier to discriminate against women, people of color, and other marginalized groups. Eric Galatis has more on the story.
Civil rights groups are sounding the alarm about potential threats to American democracy posed by Project 2025, a roadmap created by the Heritage Foundation for the next Republican president. The 900-page document calls for dismantling key protections against discrimination, access to reproductive health care, and more. Maya Wiley with the Leadership Council on Civil and Human Rights says Project 2025 aims to undo gains made 60 years ago with the passage of the Civil Rights Act, but she says this agenda isn't new.
And either we're going to stand on the victory of ending slavery and of understanding the role of a federal government in ensuring that we all have civil rights, or we will not have a democracy, and this is a blueprint for ending it.
Donald Trump has recently distanced himself from Project 2025 after praising the Heritage Foundation's plans in 2022. Heritage says the roadmap, which was co-authored by top Trump advisors, does not speak for any single candidate. It just provides recommendations. Many of those track closely with Trump's priorities, including removing regulations and checks on presidential power. AFL-CIO President Liz Shuler says Project 2025 also calls for expanding child labor and rolling back workplace protections under the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA, designed to prevent accidents, injury, and death.
Tell that to a woman who lost her son in a grain silo that could have been prevented because he was cleaning it without the proper equipment. That is OSHA. These fines and these laws are there for a reason.
Project 2025 would ban both abortion and in vitro fertilization nationally and restrict access to contraception. Patrick Gaspard with the Center for American Progress believes the roadmap's creators want to take the nation back not to 1964, but to 1864.
When men made decisions for women, when people who looked like me did not have the full agency and franchise of this great American republic, when huge corporations worked folks like farm animals.
Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York. This is Eric Galatis for the Colorado News Connection.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, July 15th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Grant Button and Nina Wayfair. The producer is Grant Button, and our engineer is Jasmine Moneymaker. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Dr. Anthony Liozowitz, Alex Gonzalez, Mason Kennedy, Eric Galatis, and Eric Tegthoff. The director for the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Marty Wall.
I'm Eliza Yurkov. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for news in depth discussing the estuaries around Oregon and other importance and their